This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's talk some Celtics, John, okay?
Let's do it.
I know you've been on this bandwagon, and a lot of us are, and I think everybody is now. They are a fun team to watch. Last night is the latest example. They slugged through for 3.5 quarters against an inferior Knicks team that was hitting a bunch of threes. They ended up with a furious comeback, led by their defense and led by Isaiah Thomas. Whatever, I think we get so focused, and it's good on sports radio and it's good in a barroom conversation about what the future of the Celtics is, what Danny's going to do, what's he going to do with all these chips, who's the next Messiah to come here. But I think a lot of people get lost in the discussion when they get into the discussion about what the Celtics will become. They get lost about what this team is right now. So let's talk about what this team is. They're a team that's worth your attention, and a lot of Boston teams aren't. And when I say worth your attention, I mean your time spent watching them. In our business, your time spent following them. If you're a fan, the investment you make to go to games, if you do, or to watch them on TV, or to talk about them, or to be in your conscience. I don't know if the Celtics are back in people's conscience because they're still playing with a lot of house money, but they should be. 13 home wins in a row. Here's some other facts for you. For as good as this team is defensively, and I want to get into discussion with you about that, and they are, they're only 13th in the league overall as far as points given up defensively. Offensively, they're 4th in the NBA.
That's right. They're going to call that a hard foul.
Love Tommy. I am the biggest unabashed Tommy lover. Here's the thing. The only teams better than them offensively as far as points scored are the Golden State Warriors, the Oklahoma City Thunder, and your Sacramento Kings with some guy at point guard leading the league in assists. However, the Sacramento Kings actually give up 2 more points a game than they score. This is a very good offensive basketball team. It really is.
Yeah, and I mean, you have to look at how they're leading the league in score, or fourth in the league in scoring. It's not on their great shooting abilities. They're 22nd in the league in shooting. They're first in the league in shots attempted. And so what does that tell you? It tells you two things. One, they play tenacious defense, and they're able to score in transition a lot. So they're scoring quick buckets. The other thing it tells you, they don't play hero ball. They don't play isolation ball. Their offense is whoever's open shoots it. And that's so rare in today's NBA. And look at last night's game, the way they came back. And I know you mentioned off the air the Evan Turner play, which you can get to in a second. It's a great play, you know. Steal the ball, save it from going in bounds, touchdown
Sullinger
pass
throws
from
a touchdown,
Sullinger.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they had a play, I think, in the last 20 seconds, and I might be mixing all these up now, where inbound play, they were down 1, Avery Bradley gets the ball, drives to the hoop, and scores.
That was a game-winning hoop.
Okay, I was trying to remember if that was a game-winning
hoop.
Or if they scored after that and then they had to score.
No,
again.
There was 21 seconds left.
Yeah.
He drove in and scored, and then Carmelo had the one last shot.
Okay, so he drives in and scores. How many teams would run that play, would run a play like that? If the Knicks had the ball in that situation, Melo pounds the ball until there's 2 seconds left, and then he hurries a shot. And so look at how the last 5 possessions for each team went down the stretch in that game. Hero ball for the Knicks, Celtics scoring in transition off their defense and with whoever's open.
Well, so Brad Stevens, among other things, is sort of debunking the NBA myths. The NBA myths are, just like in football where it's, you know, run defense and the run game, right? Just like in baseball, it's strong up the middle. So there's still truth to some of those things. In basketball, it's like, well, you need go-to guys and you need a pecking order. To your point, and you also need an 8-man rotation.
That is bogus!
That's a great one. I never heard that one from Tommy.
I thought that was going to be the BS. Remember that one with Jordan in Rick Pitino's first game?
Can I hear that one from Tommy again?
That is bogus!
That's, he was talking about Tim Bogut.
That's almost as fun as Tommy last night. You walk by the TV and you hear Tommy say things like about certain referees. That guy! Like, that's all he'll say.
Yeah, or it'll be, come on, Violet.
But So they debunk these myths. They don't have a go-to guy or a rotation of go-to guys. It's sort of closer by committee with the Celtics. And then when it comes to the eight-man rotation, no. I mean, Brad Stevens has developed a roster, and it's movable parts. And I know part of this is that they don't have those go-to guys, that guys are going to demand minutes by their effort and their performance. And it's so true the way they do that. I mean, last night, the most encouraging thing I heard after the game was, I think it was Chris Mannix, who was interviewing Isaiah Thomas, and asked him, hey, for three quarters, the Knicks shot lights out, and you guys had struggled on offense. Why did you struggle so much? His answer was, because we didn't play defense.
Yeah.
I mean, this team buys into that. They're in every single game because they'll out-hustle anybody. I'm very intrigued by tonight's game for a lot of reasons. I fully expect LeBron James to come out from what happened the last game. And by the way, LeBron is as healthy as he's been in a while. He had a triple-double last night. I expect him to come out and really come out with a vengeance. He does love playing against the Celtics, and I expect them to get blown out tonight. But then again, I can't say that because the Celtics don't get blown out, because even if they are getting blown out, they'll come back and make it a game.
Yeah, what are they? I think they're like 4-0 in their last four games, trailing by 11 or more points. I
mean,
that's not supposed to happen. Now, I think the one issue with them that is fair to bring up is, come postseason time, can you keep winning without a go-to guy? Because the game slows down. When the game is back and forth and up and down, you're able to you know, Jay Crowder can break away for a layup or a dunk or something like that. What about when Cleveland, when LeBron is dominating the ball and it turns into that slog that you were talking about earlier?
This is stupid!
Yeah, when the game turns stupid, can you then score and find ways to win? Because we saw last year in the first round, Isaiah Thomas really got swallowed up pretty significantly by the Cavs.
Well, there's your answer. Like it or not, the reality is that Isaiah Thomas is your go-to guy. So I'll give you two answers to that. He is probably going to get swallowed up again. However, I firmly believe that Brad Stevens is a good enough coach that he's going to learn from that experience and find ways to help him not get swallowed up. What does that mean? Well, credit to both Stevens and Isaiah Thomas. His game has evolved. He's become a better player. Good example last night, with 3 minutes to go, he did a tiny Archibald drive down that got that whole comeback started. He got the ball on a rebound and was in the hoop scoring within like 2 seconds.
And in between like three guys too.
Like, Isaiah Thomas doesn't know that he's that short. That's the biggest compliment you can give that guy. So you're right. In a playoff series, I mean, again, this to me, this is the fun part about it. I'm really looking forward to the first playoff series and them winning a series and just putting a notch in their belt, as Bill Parcells used to say, a trapper gets furs, putting a fur over their shoulder and moving on to the next challenge and see what they do. To me, it's still all house money. If they lose first-round playoff series with the way this season has gone, well, I don't know if it's a step back, but I'm expecting them to win a playoff series.
Yeah, and honestly, if they win a playoff series, it's a successful year. It's a good year. I don't care what happens after that, because 2 years ago, this team looked like it was dead in the water and was going to stay that way potentially for two decades. And now here we are with, they're not a championship team. So what? Nobody is, as long as Golden State is in the league. But the fact is they're wildly entertaining every single night.
617-779-7937. Interested in your thoughts about Celtics playing the Cavs tonight. Maybe tomorrow morning you'll talk more about it, because we'll have the game to talk about. But taking on LeBron in Cleveland, will we be talking about the Celts getting blown out in Cleveland and, that being the realistic, the reality that they're just not that good? Or will they have their latest game where they'll fight till the end, and we'll see what they do?
Yeah, and think about it. Cleveland is like the anti-Boston right now. They're a star-studded team that is not playing together, and there's all kinds of questions about them. The Celtics are the exact opposite. They're playing so far beyond the sum of their parts. As Mike Gorman said last night, you got to love this team.
Yeah.
And I hate everything. You know this.
I know this. Let's move on to the Red Sox. I want to talk about their defense in general, and I want to point to the three specific plays against the Rays yesterday. Number one, Evan Longoria lines a shot to third, and Pablo Sandoval makes a major league defensive play and dives. I said last night on the Fox 25 Sportscast, that's the type of nimbleness you get with 17% body fat.
Yeah, I mean,
there's no
right.
doubt about
yep.
it. But
he's like T.O.
I think when you look at that with Pablo, just like on day one when he showed up at spring training, perception is reality. So let's go by the perception of that. Guy is not a horrible defensive player at third base, is he?
He was last year because he had zero range. And so the play you're talking about where he's able to actually get off the ground and move and get a ball. That's a play he was not making last year. And you're right. Before this year, I mean, he was never going to be a Gold Glover or anything, but he was a solid average defensive third baseman, which you can live with. He was not that guy last year. If he can keep taking steps and build off what he did yesterday, you might have some.
So now let's go to the other side of the diamond. Hanley Ramirez hasn't had many signature plays at first base yet. However, in a 7-2 game yesterday in the late innings, Tim Beckham hits a line shot to short, a one-hopper that Xander Bogaerts reminds us how good he's become defensively. That's the backhanded play,
yep.
Jeter-type Ole play. But again, it's not an Ole because he makes it. He rushes the throw to first, and he throws a one-hopper to first. If you watch the play, Hanley Ramirez does not make the scoop that he needed to make. Here's the problem I have with it. We all know this, John. What it smacks of is that Hanley's not putting in the work when you watch it. He didn't look right the way he went after that scoop. And to me, that's one of those things that you go on the backfield and you're taking scoop after scoop after scoop after scoop. And you got Brian Butterfield and others giving you advice on the best way to do it. Hanley is a guy who made his bones in the infield, has good hands, has good instincts at times. But on that one, to me, as soon as I saw it, I was like, there's your perfect example of it costing them. It's a spring training game. I don't know how much it cost them.
Yeah.
But him, he's just not putting the work in with that. He went after that the wrong way.
Yeah. Now, I agree with you, having been down there. Like, Hanley was doing his work, but I don't think he was going above and beyond. He was doing what was necessary, but he wasn't doing Mike Napoli. He wasn't out there super early every day, all of this. I do feel like, in fairness, we need to give him a little bit of time. It's, you know, first, like, real game, basically, that he's played other than against the college kids. So you got to give him a little time to make that play. The one thing that a lot of us have noticed is he has this annoying habit where he tries to snap. Like, you talked about the Jeter Ole.
Yeah.
He tries to snap every pick that he makes in the dirt. He's always right. Snapping his glove. And it's like, just catch the ball. You don't need
right.
no style points required. So I don't know if that was part of what was going on with that play. But let's give him a little time to at least get game speed, game reps with those kind of balls, because let's not forget, he is learning this position.
And also, I only got a short highlight package, but in the highlight package that we got at the station last night, they did have a cutaway of Hanley coming up to Bogaerts afterwards
yep.
and tapping him in kind of an animated conversation, not angry or whatever, but Bogaerts just kind of nodding his head. But with the body language I saw there, to me, you know, if I had to take a leap, it's Hanley saying, hey, I'll get that for you, or whatever he's talking about. I mean, Hanley knows shortstop.
Yeah.
He knows what Bogaerts went through with that. But
yep.
the bottom line is, he didn't come up with the play. And an infielder loves when a guy – I mean, how much confidence did Mike Napoli build in his teammates by saving their butts at times with plays that he made?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's
Stephen Drew.
Thing. Yep.
Stephen Drew, how many scoops did Mike Napoli make for Stephen Drew?
Yeah, although Stephen Drew, he hit everybody in the chest. That was his thing. His
yeah,
throws
that's
are
true.
Right in the chest. But I get what you're saying, and it's true. And I'll, you know what? I'll give Hanley points for reaching out to Bogaerts and not laughing it off, but saying whatever he said. We don't know. But I'm sure it was something along the lines of, I'll get the next one.
So I want to go to one other defensive play, which is whatever. Deep ball to center field. When you watch the highlights of JetBlue, and you and I have been there, a lot of people have. It's hard when you look at the highlights because it looks exactly like Fenway.
Until you see the wall is too tall.
Right.
Then you're like, wait, this doesn't look right. I'm in some bizarro Fenway.
But a ball to center field, Jackie and Mookie go to where some outfielders might collide. And again, I'm reading way too much into this. But what I liked about it, Mookie in right field, not in center, calls him off. It's the center fielder's ball usually. Gets the ball. Jackie defers to him. He makes a hard catch look effortless. And, oh, by the way, it opens the bullpen door for the next reliever to
yep.
come out along the way for style points
yep.
to do it. But, again, reading way too much into this. But early on, what a good sign for the two of them. Because, again, he's playing right field now. We look at Mookie, and I think we're going to look back years from now, and the stories are going to become legend about how good a baseball player this guy is, how good an athlete he is, how he started as a second baseman, how he came from nowhere, and all that he did. Again, I'm reading way too much into this, but that's an instinctive good play and a good sign for the Red Sox defensively.
Yeah, and I would take it not so much that, you know, it's good that they didn't collide with each other and it's good that they called them off, but just think of the range they're going to have out there this year. They're going to have, as long as Jackie Bradley hits, which so far he's done, which is a good sign in its own right. But you have those two guys patrolling really more than 2/3 of the Fenway outfield because left field is smaller. you're in pretty good shape. And that is going to, you know, we talked about what hurt the pitching staff last year getting off to a slow start. Lack of range in the outfield killed them, you know, especially in left field with Hanley not making any plays. They're not going to have that problem. So if Rick Porcello gives up a ball to the triangle and Jackie Bradley runs it down, it's not a two-run triple. Now it's an F8. I think that's hugely important and shouldn't be underestimated.
617-779-7937. John Tomasi, Butch Stearns, we're here till the top of the hour. Join us if you'd like. A couple other notes from the Red Sox today. David Price threw 38 pitches over two innings in a simulated game with maybe three simulated Ks per Ian Brown. What's that quote? Maybe three simulated Ks?
Yeah, I mean, it's very – there's no – I don't even know who's umpiring. It's hard to say. They get their work in. A sim game is not a real game.
So, like, if he's facing Hanley Ramirez and it was strike three, Hanley says, no, I'm going to stay up here for another strike.
Throw me another one.
Also, Dave Dombrowski commented on John Farrell's story, quote, saying it is a personal matter and said it would not affect Farrell's job status.
Interesting. Interesting that he even went there, as far as that word goes, job status.
That
sort of reeks a little bit of, like, we have complete confidence in our coach who gets fired, like, 3 days later.
Let's go to the calls. Actually, let's take a quick break. Bill in Worcester and Rich in Providence, you guys are up next. As soon as we come back, it's Butch, John Tomasi, WEEI.
Well, it's .2 on the shot clock, so nothing's going to happen here unless it's the best tip in play of the century. Well, here we go.
Yeah! Here comes the best tipping play of the century.
Tommy and Mike are so good together.
So good.
Aren't they? I mean, they've been doing it since 1981. Really. I mean, it's just, they're just so good together. Mike's got so much respect for Tommy, and even when Tommy goes so far over the top. By the way, did you hear Larry Johnson in the last hour
saying, most of it.
But did you hear Larry say, well, Tommy's actually been objective lately. I'm like, are you kidding me?
No. Although you'll remember this. You were saying off air that you were a runner for him when he was at CBS.
Yeah, I worked for CBS in the 80s and when Tommy worked with Brent Musburger.
Yeah, when I watched those broadcasts as a kid, as a Celtics homer, I remember thinking, like, this guy Heinsohn played for the Celtics. Why does he hate the Celtics so much? My friends thought that Heinsohn hated the Celtics.
You should have. This is absolutely NBA, it's stupid.
You should have seen what LA fans thought about him.
Oh, yeah.
During that time. No social media, no internet back then.
Thank God. You have to find, the one you have to find, and I don't know if you can, this would be a challenge for Ken Laird. Rick Pitino's first game with the Celtics against the Bulls. They win. They beat Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Antoine Walker's doing the wiggle. Yeah. The whole place going crazy. Late in the game, Jordan, the greatest player in NBA history, drives baseline and gets fouled. Maybe a little bit of a ticky-tack foul. And Tommy, who was worked up into a frenzy at that point, yelled, "That's bull bleep," and said it on the air. Like, swore on the air. And Mike Gorman, there was just like a pause.
That is bogus!
Not bogus. Close. And so I waited up to watch the rebroadcast, and they bleeped it out.
My first memories of Tommy are the John Havlicek years when he coached in the 70s. I was a teenager, and I used to take the train into the Garden. And that finals in 74, that's when I first fell in love with the Celtics. They played the Milwaukee Bucks with a team with Oscar Robertson, Bobby Dandridge, and then Lou Alcindor. And they beat them in the NBA Finals. And it was, and that team with JoJo White and Don Chaney and Paul Silas and John Havlicek, and then 76, they had the memorable triple overtime game against the Suns. But Tommy as a coach has over a 619 winning percentage. I mean, Tommy, people that are in their 20s and think that Tommy's just a crazy guy that yells, take a good look at what Tommy really is. I mean, he's remarkable in his history with the Celtics.
Hall of Fame player, Hall of Fame coach, Hall of Fame homer. Hall of Fame broadcaster.
He is a Hall of Fame homer. Let's go to Bill in Worcester. Hello, Bill.
Hi, guys. I can't believe that you two guys are Tommy Heinsohn supporters. He is pathetic.
Why?
You know that he was such a great coach at the Celtics, he got fired by Red Auerbach. You know that, of course.
Yes.
Because he kept yelling and screaming. I saw Tommy Heinsohn play at Holy Cross.
Yep.
He was a great player. He was a crybaby. I saw him play for the Celtics. He was a great player. He was a crybaby. And I saw him coach the Celtics, and he could have been a great coach, but he was a crybaby.
He was a great coach.
He
was a great coach. He's in the Hall of Fame. He won two championships. He was a great coach.
Why did he get fired, Butch?
I don't know why he got fired. I don't remember why he got fired. All coaches get fired.
Yeah.
No, he got fired because he couldn't control himself. He kept screaming and yelling at the official. He's a disgrace.
Well, he found a good outlet for that, screaming and
yelling. Bill, you're a Worcester guy. How can you not like Tommy?
And I love the Celtics. And I love the Mike Garmin. I think Mike Garmin is tremendous. I feel sorry for Mike Garmin having to put up with Heisman. You know that he made a statement last week that I think the NBA sent out a directive that you can't call a foul when Isaiah Thomas drives.
He's a Celtics homer. John said it. He's a Hall of Fame homer.
He shouldn't be doing the color.
Why?
He's not prepared. Isaiah Thomas went right by the man. He doesn't know who the man is. He doesn't know the
He doesn't need to. The guy's not wearing green.
He thinks he just has to come, Butch. I can't stand Heinsohn.
Why, Bill? Where does this come from? Where does this come from?
Just since I saw him playing it.
So you'd rather have Brian Scalabrine talking to you?
He doesn't like the crybaby aspect of it.
I don't like the crybaby. Like a guy that's got class, like you two guys have class.
There we go. Kill us with kindness. What else is on your mind? You had something else you wanted to talk about.
Hanley Ramirez is a bum. He's got a terrible attitude.
Wow.
He's a dog. And no matter what team he's played for, they've got rid of him. And I learned early in my coaching career, if a guy's got a bad attitude, you're better off without him. And I know that they can't unload him, but I would sit him down and play Travis Shaw. Hanley Ramirez is a disgrace.
Well, it's interesting you say that because, John, I am interested to see how early in the season and when, if they do replace him defensively at first base with Travis Shaw.
You mean in the late innings?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that'll happen a little bit, but it may not be when you think. It may be we're blowing somebody out and we're going to give Hanley a rest because they know you got to manage his potential for injuries. I think it'll be more that than Hanley is such a butcher, we need to get him out of here because we might lose.
That's five Tommy points.
There you go. Five Tommy points for Bill and Worcester. Let's go to Rich in Providence. Hi, Rich.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
Good. Do you think, in retrospect, I want to touch upon the Celtics and the Bruins, but I also want to touch about the Red Sox, if I may. Don't you think, in retrospect, they really should have gone after Donaldson instead of Pablo?
Well, it doesn't make them unique. Every team should have went after Donaldson.
Yeah, they were caught. They definitely were caught a little bit unawares on that one. And, you know, that's on the previous regime. If a guy like that is available – and they certainly would have had the pieces to acquire him, and they whiffed.
Yeah, and I mean, isn't that an obvious one, Rich? Isn't it easy to look at the season he had in Toronto and what he's become and say, well, yeah, everybody should have went after Donaldson.
Right, yeah. As far as that Celtics draft pick this June, say it's the third pick or the fourth pick, is this going to be an impact guy that can come in like a McHale, like, you know, off the bench as a sixth man or whatever?
By all accounts, no. By all accounts. But again, here's the fun part about it, or the intriguing part about it. This is a two-player draft. And by the way, keep looking at the mock drafts on a weekly basis, and you're starting to see Brandon Ingram go ahead of Ben Simmons in some of them. So for whatever that's worth, it's Ben Simmons and Brandon Ingram, and then there's a drop-off between Dragan Bender and Jaylen Brown and the Oklahoma kid, and even Chris Dunn is up there, and others, the Kentucky kid's dropping. But so if it's beyond two, Rich, who knows? But then again, that makes this the intrigue. I mean, go back to how many drafts where, you know, again, Steph Curry was seventh. Paul Pierce was ninth. Excuse me, Paul Pierce was 10th, and Dirk Nowitzki was ninth. So when you say if they're going to be three or below, is it going to be an impact player? Who knows?
Yeah, and when you talk about like a guy like McHale, let's not forget, 4 years of college at Minnesota, those guys were more ready to come in and play a meaningful role. These kids now, you're coming in at age 20, it's a little different.
So what's your point? If Brooklyn keeps winning and the odds get lower that it's going to be third or fourth, you might be more willing to trade the pick before the lottery?
I'm wondering, is Danny going to parlay this pick and maybe something else? I mean, Do you guys really want to see Al Horford over here? I I'm not too crazy about him, but what do you think of him?
I like Al Horford as a player, but I'm kind of with you as a max contract guy heading into his 30s, who's had weird injuries, tearing his pectoral multiple times. Yeah, there's part of me that says, yeah, he'd be a good fit here, but is he worth you only have probably two of those max slots. Are you going to use one of them on him?
Look, giving all credit where it's due to Felger and Maz, my feet are firmly planted on Planet Deluja.
I don't know those names.
Planet Deluja, because I am I'm still saying, why not think about Kevin Durant? So when I think about Al Horford, again, these are all pieces. These are all chips. Like the Garnett thing, I'm only getting one of those guys if it's part of a bigger picture.
Planet Deluja just, like, kicked you off the planet for being too delusional.
Why?
Because
why is
no
that
chance,
delusional?
What, that you're going to get, that you're going to, how are you going to get him? You're going to sign him in free agency?
Yeah.
It's not happening.
Why not?
Because why would he come here?
Why wouldn't you?
What? Why wouldn't you? Because there's no other stars, and that's not how the NBA works.
But that's
now.
My point.
All the stars go together.
Rich mentioned Al Horford. I just said that.
Al Horford's not enough.
I'm not bringing Al Horford here or somebody like him unless it's part of a bigger picture
so
for the other
guy. So you're Kevin Durant, and you say, I have two choices. I can go join Steph Curry and the greatest team in NBA history.
Yeah, I get it.
Or I can go to Boston with this guy, Al Horford, who you got to see the way he rotates on defense. It's great.
John,
I want to play with that guy.
I just love it when we get into the Kevin Durant discussion and everybody says there's no way it's going to happen.
There is no way it's going to happen.
Okay, well, we said that about a million other things in Boston
like
sports,
what?
And they did. Like Kevin Garnett. You know,
did anyone say that's never going to happen?
What we said was if they don't get the first or second pick, they're screwed. And what ended up happening is they won championship and went to the NBA Finals two out of the next four years.
I would argue trading for a guy is a little bit different than signing him in free agency when he can go anywhere he wants.
Patrick is in New Market, New Hampshire. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
So I do agree with you that the Celtics, they don't have like that traditional go-to guy, that top 10 player in the league. But the five they rolled out last night in the fourth quarter was like under 2 minutes where it was Bradley, Crowder, Thomas,
Turner,
and Turner. I mean, that's a pretty formidable five. And any five of those guys can shoot from any, they can all get to the basket, they can all shoot jump shots, and they can all shoot the three.
Well, I mean, Turner and Sullinger can't.
So, Patrick, are you making the point? Are you making the point that they don't need a go-to guy?
Well, no, I won't say that. I just think that with those five guys, like, you have a variety of options there that can make the ball. I mean, they've all hit game-winning shots this year. I agree. You don't have that one guy, but I think they'll fare better in the playoffs than they did last year just because I think there's just all those guys have grown, and every single one of those five can certainly make a shot in crunch.
So let me make an unfair comparison. When the 86 Celtics are – 80 Celtics had Bird, McHale, Parrish, Ainge, and DJ on the floor. I would make a similar argument that I'd be comfortable with any one of them taking the final shot because as bad as DJ's shooting percentage was, if the game was on the line, I had pretty confidence.
Money.
Just like John Valentin I used to. I didn't care what his average was. If there was a guy on second, I felt like he was going to get the guy in. But that said, Bird was getting the ball. And I know that's unfair. Because it's Larry Bird, but Bird was getting the ball. Before that, Havlicek was getting the ball. After that, Paul Pierce was getting the ball. It's just the way it was. Are you saying that you don't need that in the NBA to win now?
Well, I'm talking about the Celtics specifically, and if the defenses are all going to key in on Isaiah in the fourth quarter, the final 2 minutes, Turner, Crowder, Bradley, and even Sullinger, all those guys are capable of making baskets.
Well, let's give John Tomasi credit. You brought this up, John. Let's see in a playoff series.
Right.
I think we might change our tune in a playoff
series. Maybe, but I mean, it's still fun to watch. I mean, look at last night. So you had Isaiah started it with a drive to the hoop.
Yep.
You had two home runs to Crowder. You had the play we talked about with Bradley, the drive to the hoop, the layup. You had a drive and dish to Sullinger for a layup. You had Evan Turner pulling up at the elbow.
And by the
shot.
Way, the Evan Turner pull-up was the most intriguing one to me for a lot of reasons. A, it gave them their first lead.
Yep.
B, Turner took the rebound, came up, and there was no doubt in his mind that he was shooting it. He fed off of the crowd. He hit that jumper.
Yep.
So, again, you can overstate this. He wanted that shot, and he made it.
And he's hit a bunch of – I mean, he has hit a bunch of those shots.
He was the second pick in the draft.
You don't want him shooting threes. He's not a good three-point shooter.
Right.
He's not really a good outside shooter, but – 15 feet in, he has his spots on the floor, those elbow to elbow. He's dangerous, and he's not afraid to take those shots. He's got that weird, funky kind of fall-away looking thing that he takes. He can get to the hoop. Fun player on a fun team.
John Tomasi, Butch Stearns, final segment after this.
Can he stare at the guy?
Apparently not.
Is that against the rules now, staring? Apparently. I don't like that.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.